Welcome to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee here, your host. Hope you're having a good day. It's good to be with you. Today we have with us from all the way from Alberta, Canada, Kathy Picaro, who has an amazing story to tell us about her own recovery to a life of love. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. How are things up in Edmonton?
It's not that bad. It's only minus 16. We were having the nicest weather in the history of Canada, I think. Usually
minus
this time of year,
16.
It's minus 50, so.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that is so cold.
Oh, yes, it is.
Very different from California, believe me. Well, good. Well, it's good to have you on the show, and you have an amazing story to tell. So please tell our audience about yourself and a little bit about your story.
Okay. I come from a background of child sexual abuse, a lot of family violence. I mean, I used to run and hide in the doghouse because that was my only safe place. And that was where I started having conversations with God and, like, how can things like this happen if you're such a loving God? And just, you know, really confused about life. And as I was growing up, there was quite a few rapes, a gang rape, a lot of domestic violence and just really unhealthy habits. And through all that, there was a couple suicide attempts and just myself trying to figure things out. I was such a mess, so confused. And I managed to pull myself out of the depths of despair by focusing on a nursing career. And, I mean, I went to school, all is well, but although, I mean, I had this great, fabulous career ahead of me, I was carrying around deep wounds. And what happens to wounds when you don't take care of them? It becomes infected, right? And then the infection, if you don't take care of the infection, it can become septic. And you can, you know, it's very detrimental to your health. So what happened is I just chose to not deal with anything and bury things like we all put in that sacred vault. And you know what? What happened a long time ago, you know, it was a long time. It doesn't matter. Leave it alone sort of thing. Well, that attitude got me into addiction and not so much drugs but alcohol. And I became quite the alcoholic. I call it a 12-year drinking career. And what that did... what do you do when you're drinking? You make poor choices, and I had zero self-esteem. I had zero coping skills. I even though I have this great career, I still don't know how to take care of Kathy. I'm really good at taking care of everybody else. But one day I showed up at work. I was on night shift. I was 40 years old by now. Years and years of trauma and abuse and violence and all sorts of horrible things. I was strangled 3 times to the point of losing consciousness. I mean, I lived with a shovel on my porch as a reminder of what I'd be buried with. Like, it was extreme. And anyway, I showed up at work, and I couldn't read my sheet, and I couldn't see the patient list, and I couldn't understand. Like, it's like my mind just stopped functioning. So that just was the beginning of my journey to self-love and self-discovery. I went to a 21-day treatment for alcohol, but that, I mean, 21 days, you can't fix a lifetime of trauma in that amount of time. I relapsed, and this time, I ended up losing my nursing career. I ended up homeless, drunk, with absolutely no hope. And by now I'm 42 and just one big mess, right? And so this guy named Toothless Joe, on the 7th day of being homeless, he slaps me on the back and he goes, "This is the life. Live it. Love it." Because he was quite happy with, you know, his state of affairs. But for me, it was like, I call it a God smack because I saw crystal clear. When he slapped me on the back, it's like everything that years and years of depression and self-loathing, it just shattered. And I saw clear, and I looked at him, and I said, "What did you just say?" I said, "This is not my life." And I actually stomped my foot, and I said it again. And what I did is I made a decision. And although I had nothing to my name but literally the clothes on my back, I had my mind, and I just made a decision that I was going to do whatever it took to get away from that guy. So I turned around, went to the hospital, went to this women's, it's a faith-based program that they have here in Canada, where you live for a year and you just figure yourself out. You have five days a week of treatment and learn about self-esteem and, you know, anger management and all sorts of things, right? And so I did that. And I realized I couldn't go back to nursing, so I needed a job where I wasn't taking care of anybody else. So it turns out I went to a career planning workshop, and my aptitude was to be a heavy equipment operator. Well, I laughed so hard I just about fell off my chair. I mean, how do you change? How do you go from a nurse to a heavy equipment operator? Anyhow, they sent me to this program where they bring women into the trades, and today I drive the biggest truck in the world. I operate the biggest grader in the world and the largest water truck. It is literally, it is not a commercial truck like you see on the highways. It is 2.5 stories high, 3,800 square feet. I drive a house, literally. The tires are 14 feet high. It is massive. It weighs 1,000,000 pounds. It's this monster of a truck, and if anybody wants to go on my website, they can see it.
What is your website, by the way?
Oh, it's my name, www.cacaro, with a K, Tuccaro, T-U-C-C-A-R-O. And because my just saying it doesn't, you need to see the picture. It's unbelievable. So the job, it's fabulous, but it's not just the job. It's the transformation in that. I ended up writing a book. I wrote a book called Dream Big. And it's based on the emotions I was feeling at the time, like fear, loneliness, despair, depression. And I intertwine my story along the emotions as I'm living them. And there's 4 or 5 questions at the end of every chapter to reach out to the reader on, like, what are they afraid of? Like, what if you take that one word fear out of it, and what could you accomplish? And, yes, there's a chapter on how to learn to love yourself and how to look at yourself in a different way, and just, it's really beneficial. I've had really, really good feedback from it, and it's now available in English, French, and Spanish. And actually, Caterpillar, these trucks that I drive are built by Caterpillar, Caterpillar India just translated my book for me in Hindi, so that's fabulous. It was quite the trip to go from nursing to homeless to complete despair and hopelessness to all of a sudden now I travel the world on my days off. I work with women. I work with youth. I go to juvenile homes. I go to communities that are craving change, specifically to give them hope again and tell them or show them more so that change is possible. It doesn't matter where you were. What matters is how you your mindset on how to deal with it, how to flip it around and see that your value doesn't decrease based on somebody's inability to see your worth. What you believe is what matters. Right?
Oh, that's beautiful, Kathy. You know, I it sounds like that year a program that you had was transformative for you, it sounds like. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened during that year of healing?
That year, I didn't have to worry about anything. We had, it was a home for 25 women, and Monday to Friday we had classes starting from 9 till 4, and there was art therapy, there was a 12-week sexual assault recovery group where there was a small group of women that would attend, and we would have to really dig deep into exactly what happened and kind of deal with it. We had to learn about forgiveness. There was anger management. And that class, the lady said, Kathy, I said, I don't need anger management because, I mean, I'm the nicest person on the planet. I'm not angry. She says, just because you said that, you're going in the class because anger comes out in different forms. I've always thought anger, you know, showed up in violence, but it doesn't. It comes out in depression. It comes out in eating habits. It comes out in all sorts of mental health sneaky little ways, right? It's not necessarily violent. We had to learn about boundaries was a big part of the program, learning to say no. And, I mean, I didn't even know what the word boundaries meant when I went in there. We had to learn about codependency, about learning to step back from people and not living the other person's life and what they want you to be, right? It was a really in-depth taking a look at who Kathy is and not the person that I thought I was, because what I would do was try and transform myself into what everybody else wanted me to be, right? So I was really good at being the chameleon. You want me to be this way? I'll be this way. You want me to be this way? Sure, I can do that. Just that desperate desire to be loved, right? So I had to really untangle all the lies that have been fed into me since childhood, like I'm not good enough or you're too stupid to live or things like you're a waste of skin and you're useless, you'll never amount to nothing. All these negative things that have been literally ingrained in me since childhood. I had to unravel all that and figure out really who Kathy was and accept the fact that I'm freaking awesome, that I got a lot to give. So, yeah, it was quite, but that doesn't, change doesn't happen overnight. You know, I had to learn to change the story that I was telling myself. So, yeah, I'm still a work in progress. And that was back in 2009 that I started this. So, I mean, change is never ending, so.
Yes, exactly. Wow, there's so many really good messages in what you're saying. And we had another guest on the show earlier who talked about how trauma is when you believe the negative messages that other people give you. And it sounds like you've been able to transcend the negativity and abuse. And like you said, to take ownership of a choice about how you choose to perceive yourself. I love that idea of really empowering yourself to make that choice. That's really, really good. Can I ask you, Kathy, what is your life like now?
My life is...
Do you have family, or what's it like now?
My life is filled with love and hope, and I mean, the one thing I know, the biggest lesson I learned in nursing was the trouble that people thought they had time. Right, you think you have time until one day, boom, you get something, and then you realize you don't have time. So I make the most of my time by doing, like right now I'm writing. I wrote a children's book back in March, in April. I'm working on my third book right now. I've written the Dream Big workbook. So I release chapters, workbook chapters, like a 20 questions per chapter that is based on my book Dream Big. And that's available in the form of e-books. I've already released four. I'm working on chapter five. I am working on starting up an orphanage down in Grenada, down in the Caribbean islands. I go there all the time, and I work with the women down there and the juveniles. And there's so much sexual abuse going on the Caribbean islands. It's absolutely horrific. So I also am involved with volunteering with our rescue. It's Operation Underground. It's about taking children away from child sex slavery. So I have a lot on the go, plus my full-time job and my speaking engagements. Another big thing that I'm doing right now is I'm working with a Hollywood screenwriter to get my book Dream Big turned into a movie. How fabulous is that?
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow, great. Tell us about your relationship life now.
Oh, man. You know, learning about boundaries was really difficult for me. I've always had so much violence from men and poor choices. I have the most loving, kind relationship ever. Like, I'm just so blessed. But because I had to learn how to keep my own boundaries, and when I'm not feeling well, I just say it. Or if there's something that I'm not happy with, I don't do it because to please somebody else. I speak my voice. I have my voice. I speak my ground. I have a backbone now. I'm able to say things and not tiptoe around. It's beautiful. That year in there, I actually spent a total of 2 years in there in that program for women. To really, really, you know, chip away. There's a lot of layers in trauma, a lot of layers. So, and that really helped me.
What were those layers like for you, Kathy?
Pardon me?
What were those layers for you if you were to sort of describe that to somebody else going through the healing you've gone through?
Okay, the biggest one, what I thought, my biggest problem was being raped many times and the gang rape and child sexual abuse since I was less than 4 years old. And I thought that was my biggest problem in life, that once I dealt with that I'd be fine. Well, once I did deal with that and I left that women's program thinking, you know what, I did my best. Well, the next layer that I had when I came back to the women's program later on in life, I realized that the next layer was guilt. And I wasn't able to forgive myself for the things that I've done in my drinking days in relation to my daughter. Like, you know, she grew up in a very unstable home, and I was drunk all the time. Yes, I was a nurse, but I'd come out the minute I was off shift, I'm drinking. So, I mean, I missed a lot of the school events, so I had to deal with that personal issue. It was easy for me to forgive other people, but to forgive myself was very difficult. So that was another layer. And then another layer was, like I said earlier, about anger management, learning to recognize that it's okay to be angry at these people instead of just saying, oh, no, you know, they were sick, and making excuses for them, or romanticizing the abusive partners that I had in life, the ones that beat the crap out of me. It was really... The layers ran deep, and I would pluck one off, and then I'd deal with something else. I would pluck another one, and there'd be another one. I really had to focus on wellness, on personal wellness as a whole.
You know, I think so many people can relate to what you're saying. It seems like so many people, when they suffer the kind of extreme trauma that you have gone through, because of not being taught how to protect yourself and not being taught that you have worth and value, and since that's all you're used to, so many people go on to sort of walk into situations where they are re-traumatized over and over again, and then do things which that are maybe they regret, that are perhaps not being able to be there for other people, and so. Yeah, that just reinforces the self-hatred, the trauma introduced in the first place. And it sounds like I love what you said, Kathy, about the need for self-forgiveness. That's so good. What did you do to be able to come to a place of self-forgiveness?
We had to write a lot of letters, and we had this really this workbook that we had to work through. That had, oh my gosh, it took me 4 months to work through it. I forget the name of what it was called, but they sell it at Indigo here in Canada, Chapters. The letters, any time you journal something, it releases. Like people think, oh, no, I don't know how to write, or I don't want to write. Because when it's one thing to know it in your head, it's a completely different story to sit down and write it out. So that's what we had to do. We had to write these letters, and then we'd be taken outside, and there's a fire pit, and then we would go and burn them because it would release it to the universe, and you're not carrying it anymore. And that is, I'm not saying that it happened overnight. No, it didn't. Because, I mean, I had a lot of guilt that I was carrying around, a lot of things that I can't change of the way. And in regards to my daughter, I used to try and buy her love back, to buy her forgiveness back. And I realized there's no amount of money in the world that's going to fix, you know, whatever happened in the past, my behavior due to alcohol. However, the relationship we have today is based on love and forgiveness. Because if she wasn't able to forgive me, she didn't talk to me for 2 years. I was so awful, like just who I was back then. It took her a long time to realize that alcohol is a poison, and I was really affected by that.
So
learning to realize that you make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes and poor choices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's okay. Right. It's part of life. So I made some really crappy choices back then, but today it's not. It's a different story.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that.
And the beauty of it is that you have the possibility to change your story at any given moment, at any minute in time. You're not happy with what you're with where you're at. Fix it, change it, quit your job, move, leave. People make excuses so many times, and it's almost as if they would prefer hanging on than hanging on to all that damage, that rather than letting it go and stepping into the unknown, because fear is holding them back.
I love what you said about choice. Right, we always have a choice to change the way we live today. Right, we can't change the past, but we can change how we live this day, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. There's an author I just recently finished a book of her called The Choice by Edith Eger. She's a 90-year-old psychologist who is still living in La Jolla and practicing at the age of 90. And she published her first book at the age of 87 called The Choice. And she was a survivor of Auschwitz. She spent a year or two in Auschwitz and really came very just a hair's way away from dying of starvation, and really struggled with healing from her extreme trauma over many, many years. And she talked about these questions about choice, like you, rather than asking the question what happened and why, or what happened, you can ask what now. And make a choice to focus on what do I do now, which I hear you saying that in your story.
You're absolutely right. Like with my story, it was the recognition that although I didn't have the ability to stop what was done to me in the past, I today have the power to choose how I'm going to overcome that. And am I going to hang on to it like I used to and be miserable and live in that rut? Or am I going to look it in the face, you know, deal with it, and then accomplish something even greater than I could ever expect with that same pain? If by flipping it around, by changing my mindset, my perspective at looking at things, yes, it happened, no, I can't change it, but what can I do to take that pain and catapult it into and create something that's going to help, hopefully, millions of people? That's how I look at it, and that's what I'm striving for.
Yes, exactly. It sounds to me like, in a weird kind of way, I'm almost anxious to say this a little bit or scared to say this, Kathy, but your trauma and the way that you dealt with your trauma, and because of the way that you have healed from your trauma, it's made you, the trauma has almost forced you to grow into an extremely evolved individual, but as a necessity for being able to heal from so much trauma.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I decided that moment with Toothless Joe on the street when I made that decision that this was not my life. I knew right then that there's something greater in me that I need to do and that I need to find it. I just needed to tap into it. And even today, I still think there's even more, something bigger I need to be doing. So that's what pushes me. Like I get up at 3:30 in the morning just so I could write before work. I work a 13-hour shift up in the mine, and I work for, it's a 16-day rotation. So I'm up there for 16 days working 13-hour days. But I still get up at 3:30 so that I can focus on something other than just work, something that I can, my job, it's just a job. It's not who I am. It pays the bill. It pays really well, and it gives me the time off that I can travel. Well, when the world opens up again, when I can travel and make the changes that I want to make everywhere I go. So, yeah, I'm not the typical person. I guess I would say not above average, but the drive inside me is like a fire, is what I could say, because, like I said earlier, time is precious. So I'm using the most of my time that I have available. And I'll give you an example on that. Just last month, my best friend, who was living with me temporarily for the last 9 months, she passed away in my home here unexpectedly from heart failure at the age of 51. Well, that just reinforced everything that I've been working towards, that you don't know. You don't know how much time you have. So what I'm doing is making the best of what I do have so that I can leave a legacy behind, that people can actually, you know, do something with my work and look at the workbook, read what I'm writing, and maybe one thing that I wrote might inspire them to change or grow. Right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, really your trauma and healing of it has given you sort of a purpose and meaning in life to be able to help other people.
Yeah.
If you can do this, to show that other people can do this as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. Through journaling and through the workbook work that you did, you really came to a place of self-forgiveness. And I'd like to maybe go back and talk a little bit about how this all came about, if you're willing to go into that, and talk a little bit about how you came to forgiveness of others, too, if that would be okay with you.
Sure. Absolutely.
Great. Okay, good. Well, let's take a brief break. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, Michael McGee here, your host, with our survivor guest, Kathy Takaro, who has now dedicated her life to helping others to heal from their trauma and to transform from being victims to vital survivors. Very inspiring. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, with our guest, Kathy Takaro, author, and who has dedicated her life to helping others heal from trauma just as she has. Welcome back, Kathy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
If you're comfortable, I'd like to maybe ask you to share a little bit more about your parents and your home life that you grew up in, and your understanding of how all that came to be and to unfold. I'm sure you've done a lot of work on that in your healing.
I have. It was, I had repressed most of it because it's, you know, like anybody who suffers trauma, you don't want to look at it, you don't want to remember it, you think, you know what, it was a long time ago. But in order to heal, you need to go back and look at it and figure out a lot of things. Like, I was put in a foster home until I was 4 years old, and that's where the abuse started. My very first memory is a hand covering my mouth telling me not to scream or cry. And so when I was four, like, I never spoke a single word until I went back. I moved back with my mom. She remarried. And then I started talking at four. But she remarried a monster. She didn't realize he sexually abused my sister, my older sister, like all three of us, but mostly my older sister. And like it was him, his father, and his brother, all three of them sexually assaulted my sister. And my stepfather, he sexually assaulted my older sister, so his father and his brother as well. So all three attacked my older sister. Needless to say, she spent most of her life rather messed up. She's doing good now, but it took a long time. So you can see that our childhood is very, very troubled and dysfunctional. There was extreme violence. And when my mother finally managed to escape, and I say escape because that's what it was, when I was 10, well, we ended up moving across Canada to the safety of her family. And there she is. This is in 1980, and she's got three teenagers. I was 10 by this time, my sister 12, and the other one 13. And she's trying to manage and working two and three jobs at a time, trying to keep food on the table and have us healthy. But that's when, I mean, my mother started to drink and my sister fell into drugs, and here I am kind of all on my own trying to figure things out. I was raped at 14. I was sexually assaulted at 15 by, my mother had resent me to see that initial foster family because they wanted to see me. She had no idea that I was sexually assaulted as a small baby. So I went back there, and it started again. And so this time, like, the police were involved in that sexual assault, but no charges were ever laid. And the wife had called me a dirty little whore, saying that I was wanting her husband. It was so messed up. And then at 18, I became a model, and I was drugged and raped by a photographer down in Miami. And I never told anybody about that because I thought it was my fault. And at 19, I was gang raped, and so I still thought that was my fault, and the police were never involved. I thought it would be like a he said, she said sort of thing. Instead of dealing with it, I ended up on a bridge with one leg over wanting to jump, you know, thought that suicide would be the answer because there was just so much pain. So later on in life, once I actually went back and looked at all these issues, it was very difficult for me to, number one, to let go. And it was also difficult for me to actually accept that it really wasn't my fault, that it's not the clothes you wear, it's not how you look or what you say or what you don't say. Things happened, and I didn't have the ability to stop it, but I really do have the ability to change my perspective on it. And self-forgiveness was crucial in that. And recognizing that it's not other people's opinions of me, whether good or bad, that's going to change my destiny. It's my opinion of me that gives me my self-worth, right? So it doesn't matter what Joe Blow says. What matters is what Kathy says. So it was a very difficult concept to accept.
Yeah, very important. Kathy, how did you come to a place of forgiving these people who brutalized you?
Oh, my gosh. It was my faith in God, really, my spiritual side that gave me the strength to be able to do that. Because number one, I don't believe that carrying hate or not necessarily hate or just anger and resentment, and I think that's really toxic to a person's mental health. And I am not someone who wants to walk around carrying. I need to be able to forgive, regardless of what. And I really believe it's my faith in God and on my spiritual side that helped me accomplish that and understand that it wasn't coming from me, that this had nothing to do with me, that it's other people that are sick. And so, yeah. If I'm going to grow, I need to be able to let go. Hey, that rhymed.
Yeah, to grow, let go. Let go to grow. I love that. That's very good. As you look at these people who brutalized you now, do you do you see them as sort of acting out of their own sickness and ignorance that they did that to you, or how do you understand now what people do
to you? Absolutely. There's some, like, there's a lot of sick people out there. I mean, I just had the mishap of having poor choices when I was drinking in the men that I chose as partners, because I didn't believe in myself enough to listen to the red flags, to pay attention to those red flags, which are very come early on in relationships. And that's one thing that I do teach women in when I go to women's shelters on paying attention to that. But it's also, I was basing everything on me, on other people, and what they thought, right? So now with the way the coin has changed, has flipped over, is that I base my who I am on what I think and not what a man thinks, right? So that's a big difference. But it took time to be able to forgive, and a lot of letters were written, a lot of prayer, and a lot of trying to analyze. Why am I doing certain things? Why did I just say that? Why did I just do that? You have to be able to look at yourself and really dig deep and figure out why are you reacting like this? There's a reason why. It's not you don't just do something. There's a reason to everything. So it takes self-analysis. And that's why I'm writing the workbook that accompanies Dream Big, is so that people, I mean, most people don't have the therapy that I have. So I'm not a psychiatrist by far. I'm not a counselor, but I'm just using my own experience and to kind of help people that they too can change. They too can look at themselves. But you know, people are so distracted by tablets, by games and videos and this and that they don't want to look at themselves. So they keep themselves, you know, looking elsewhere. So that's why
we're that's really true. I think, you know, you are a perfect example of that. You've got to see it to be free of it, and you got to feel it to heal it. And I think people are avoidant of, you know, really facing and really experiencing in an authentic way the terrible, terrible pain from their trauma. And also their shame. There's so much shame. And somehow
shame,
you've got over your shame to be able to look at yourself clearly at what you were doing and what you were thinking. And you had a lot of courage, it sounds like, to look at yourself very clearly. Did you find that shame was a barrier for you, for looking at yourself and
oh,
your
life?
Oh, my
God, shame is one of the biggest things. It holds you back because, number one, you don't feel you're worthy enough. You don't feel good enough. You don't feel, I don't deserve this. I was such a crappy parent, or, you know, I've made so many bad things. I've done so many horrific things that you feel dirty all the time. But it was learning to understand that when I was in that dark place that I thought I was buried, it really wasn't. It took that for me to understand that, you know what, I was actually planted, and now people, they really, really believe that hanging on to the past, you know, that it's going to help them, like, oh, you know, by not dealing with it, but it really does more damage than if they let go and look at it and understand it.
Let go to grow. I'm going to steal that from you, Kathy, okay?
You go right ahead.
I love that. I love
that. If you don't make time for your wellness, you're going to be forced to make time for your illness.
Yes,
that's
exactly
how I feel.
I love that. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You listen to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, with our guest, Kathy Takaro. And stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee here, your host, and we have with us Kathy Takaro talking about her amazing story of moving from a victim to a thriving survivor, an extraordinary story of courage and healing. Welcome back, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
You know, the thought occurs to me that you know, one thing that you said in terms of your work and forgiving others is you transform to really seeing the people who harmed you as sick. And I don't think anybody purposely has kids to mess them up. And I'm sure your parents didn't either. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about your parents and how they came to be the way that they were with you. And I'm wondering if they had histories of trauma and neglect as well, but sort of got passed on to you because it wasn't dealt with in there by themselves?
Well, I can't speak for my father because he abandoned us when I was 6 months old, and that's why I ended up in the foster home. And I've only seen him once in my life, so I don't know. And my stepfather, after my mom escaped him when I was 10 years old, I've never seen him again, so I couldn't tell you. But for my mother, she came from a family of 8 children. My grandmother raised them all on her own. There was no violence, no sexual abuse. Like, it didn't come from that. In my mother's case, it was just her inability. By the time, like, my stepfather really damaged her mentally, and when I said earlier that she raised us 3 teenagers alone, working 2-3 jobs, she had no coping skills either, so she was drinking. And so it was just overwhelming for her. And it's not that she was a bad mother. I mean, she was doing her best working to try to provide food and clothing on 3 growing teenagers. It was very difficult. But it's just she had no coping skills. So that was kind of passed on, I guess you could say, because her way of coping was drinking. And so my way of coping when trouble would happen would be to drink as well, or run away as far as I could, right, and not deal with it. I do today, however, with my own daughter, I've broken that cycle now that I have, like, 9 years sober, and I'm teaching her to, like, from all my past mistakes, and I'm teaching her how to have coping skills because she's struggling right now with her own issues. So I'm trying to help her to the best of my ability to break. Like, my mom finally quit drinking, which is fabulous. Both my sisters quit all drugs and alcohol, which is fabulous. I have all going on 9 years sober, which is fantastic. And my daughter as well. So it's learning to change, break that cycle, you know. And I think it's only through education, really.
Yeah, so your mom was really overwhelmed, and you didn't grow up in a home where she could teach you coping skills, and she was coping with her pain by drinking. And there was nobody there to sort of teach you and be with you and connect with you and look out for you and sort of show you the way, from what you're saying. Not because anybody's a bad person, but because they're just not, they don't have the capability. It's more like a disability or what I like to call a love wound in a way.
Yeah, that's exactly, that's well said, yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, good. Well, I know you said so much here that I think it's so valuable. How did you get your courage to be able to do this work, do you think?
You know, like, I've always known there was something greater inside of me that needed to come out, but I just couldn't figure it out. And it was until that moment with Toothless Joe, that's when things started to change, and I knew, like, no, like, whatever I was living that was not my life. And if you want to grow, you need to be able to look at yourself, and that was the only way. I'll give you a little trick that when I was in my first time in treatment in 2008, the counselor gave me a picture of a water bottle, and she had me write on every line of that water bottle, those ridges, everything dating from as far as back as I could remember, every trauma that I had, and to write it out. And so it's one thing to know it, but when I sat down on that piece of paper, that's when I realized, oh my God, like, I had stuff on both sides of the paper. I had to flip it over. I had so much trauma, and I'm looking at it. That's when I realized, okay, you can't just sit back anymore and pretend that it didn't happen. Clearly, you need to look at it. And I couldn't have done it in 21 days. That's why that women's program for a year, it gives you time to slowly address them. And it's not the speed that matters in looking at yourself. The fact that forward is forward, you know, bottom line, as long as you're moving forward. And another thing that really pushed me is the fact that I wanted a new life so bad that it required of me to let go of the old one. And I'm not just saying just drop it, but to really address it and then move on, because I knew that the next level of my life would demand a different version of Kathy, not my old ways of thinking, right? It required for me to change the mindset, change the perspective on how I looked at myself, and change the story that I was telling myself if I wanted to grow.
You know, and that's what I pass on to other people. You know, even now to this day that you might be triggered into sort of what are called schema, or just sort of old trauma-based ways of perceiving yourself in the world that you can sort of slip back into that if you're triggered, possibly. Does that ever happen to you?
Well, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. My first month of driving this big truck, this house that I drive, my self-esteem is really shaky, number one, back then. And number two, I'm in a world of men. Like, there was 100 men, and there's only 3 women. So, I mean, these are big, heavy equipment operators, these tough guys. And here I am. I'm driving the biggest truck in the world, and I'm going through an intersection. I have to bring it to the maintenance center. And they had security gates, people, and there was pickups on both sides of as far as I could see. And it was a beautiful day, and people are getting out of the pickups. Because once you see these trucks go by, the sound alone is quite amazing. So in the middle of the intersection, I get the worst post-traumatic flashback that I've ever had in my life. It hit me from behind like a tidal wave. It took my breath away, and I couldn't see the road. I couldn't see anything. All I could see was the most humiliating moments in my life. That it was such a flashback, and I'm hearing words like, you know, you're useless, you're stupid, you're fat, you're ugly, you'll never amount to nothing, who do you think you are, all these things, and I can't see the road. I'm driving in the middle of the intersection, and I'm gasping for air. I'm hyperventilating. So, and I'm like, oh God, oh God. And so what I did is I rolled down the window, and I said, oh heck no. I said, my past does not define who I am today. So what I did is I took all that negativity and I threw it out the window, and I said, no, this is not everything that I've worked for. Is not that, right? So what I did, so now I got this gaping hole, and where I threw out the negativity, but you have to replace that with something positive. So what I did to give me my power back, as I'm going through this intersection, there's all these people, I did the queen wave. It was like I was in a parade. So I'm waving, and, you know, I'm waving both sides, but it sounds silly, but by my doing the queen wave, it empowered me again to realize that the past is just that, the past. That I worked hard to get to where I am, and that I am responsible for my happiness, and I'm in control. Like, I'm the master of my own ship. And so, yeah, I continued with the queen wave, and I was blowing kisses, and I'm like, hey, it's Kathy. And really, the truck is so big, they don't really even see who's driving. They're just looking at the wheels and, you know, looking at the mechanical aspect of this truck. But it gave me my power back, and from that moment forward, I was fine. I don't, even if I have flashbacks, I talk my way through them.
Oh, that's very good, yeah. You know, the other thing to point out is that you had a lot of help to heal, and for people who are listening, it's so important that we mention, right, that you need good expert help to people don't heal from this kind of severe trauma on their own, don't you think?
No, you need the help. You really do. And there's lots of resources out there available.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants, they can always contact me. I will always talk to anybody. My website is www.KathyTuccaro.com. And there's a contact thing. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm easily to get hold of, and yeah, I have even a page of list of resources on my website as well.
Yes, I see that. There's a great resource section on your website, and people need to pick up a copy of your book, Dream Big,
it's available at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, okay, great.
And Amazon.
Well, Kathy, it's
been
great having you on the show. I want to wish you the best in terms of your continued work helping to heal the world. And thank you so much for being with us. It's been great having you.
Thank you for having me. It really was great.
Yes, it's great. So you're listening to How to Love Show with Dr. Mike here with our guest, Kathy Tuccaro. Stay tuned. I'll be right back to close out this episode right after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. My name is Michael McGee, and you can learn more about me and the work that I do on healing, growth, and transformation at howtolove.com. Boy, I want to really thank Kathy for her time, for being on our show, and I hope you all were inspired as I was by her story of recovery. She went through really, really severe trauma and really came out of that really, really well. So inspiring. I also had mentioned a book that you might also want to check out in addition to Kathy's book by Edith Eger, E-G-E-R. called The Choice, and that talks about her survival of Auschwitz. And her, she became a psychologist, and she has a lot of wisdom in that book about the healing of trauma. You know, Kathy, you wouldn't know it from where she is right now, but it's amazing to think that she was homeless at one point because of her trauma and the way that she coped with it with drinking. It's so funny. I used to walk by homeless people, and I would be sort of judgmental of them, like, why don't they get a job? There's help out there. There's rehabilitation. There's disability. There's treatment. Why don't these people get treatment? But now that I understand trauma and mental illness and addiction a little bit deeper, I have so much more compassion for people who are homeless. And I just realized that really nobody in their right mind would choose homelessness. It's just not something that anybody would choose unless they were really, really damaged in some way. I know a story of one person with severe PTSD who got back from the war. He was a soldier, and he just, because of his PTSD was so severe, he could not be around other people. And because of that, he lived in the woods and would just go into town once every few weeks to get necessities, and then would return. And people who about half the people who are homeless are doing so because they lack affordable housing, and they really need help with that. People who are living in poverty and those with mental illness are at a much higher risk of homelessness because they lack the kind of economic and social and functional reserves that they need to be able to cope with adversity when things are tough. We see that a lot now with people living on the margins, falling into homelessness with the COVID epidemic that we have. Also, homelessness really disproportionately affects people of color, and you know, maybe as many as possibly 40% of homeless people are black, even though they only make up about 13% of our population. One of the things that it's important to understand is that when it comes to homelessness, the trauma is almost universal among people who suffer from homelessness. Trauma increases the risk of homelessness, as we see with Kathy, but also homelessness increases the risk of trauma. In one study, over all of the women and over 90% of the men who were surveyed who were homeless had suffered at least one traumatic event. And over 50% had witnessed somebody being badly injured or killed. And 50% of the women and 10% of the men had been raped. So homelessness is very traumatizing, both becoming homeless and being homeless. About 25, maybe to 50% of people were not, it can vary, have some sort of severe mental illness like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or addiction. Roughly a quarter to a half of people who are homeless. And homeless people have 3 to 6 times a higher rate of physical illness as well. So the people who are homeless have what's really called sort of trimorbidity oftentimes, which is sort of a mental health issue combined with an addiction or substance use disorder as one of those mental health issues, and also physical illness. You know, given this, it's no wonder that the average age of death of somebody who's homeless is about 50 years old as compared to about 78 for the non-homeless American. Really almost 30-year shorter lifespan among people who are homeless, which is really a shame because these people oftentimes die of illnesses that can be treated or prevented. So it's really important to realize that we have a desperate need to solve this homelessness problem. It's really a shame that we even have homelessness in a country as rich as ours, but there are some factors that really get in the way. And about a quarter to a half of people who are homeless don't want treatment, either because they're not aware they have a mental illness or they're just afraid and lacking of trust in other people, or because they have a severe addiction that is driving their decision to stay homeless because the addiction is telling them that they have to continue addicting rather than to get sober. And they've lost their capacity to really choose for themselves what would be best for themselves. And so there's a real need to address that legal issue with people who are homeless, to be able to get them treatment. And then even if we could get them or sort of assert ourselves to really have them choose, get the treatment that they need, then there's the issue of really a lack of resources and funding for supportive housing and for treatment. So this is really a crisis issue for many people. I think that there are about 500,000 people who are homeless in the United States, which is just really a shame. Kathy's story is a wonderful story. Thank God that she had the resources that she had to heal, and that she had that flash moment where she decided that she wanted a different life for herself. Very inspiring. I think what we know from this is that anybody can heal from severe trauma as long as they get the help they need and they're willing to do the work to do so. In any case, I hope that you have a good week. I hope the show was helpful to you. I hope it's a week of love, and we'll hopefully have you back with us again next week. But thank you for joining us on the How to Love Show. Be well.